first half, now that it's over, how would you encapsulate the whole thing?
Interesting. we went through a lot, but the guys continue to battle. They continue to show up and continue to believe in themselves, So very proud of them. We're in a better position now, but understanding that we still got ways to go. And, but it's a good feeling. Got to give them credit because they work really, really hard. And, something special going on in that room, we'll reset the next 4 days, and then we'll be ready to go on Friday.
Oh, my God. Todo lo malo echado pa allá. Oh, my God. Dame salud y prosperidad. Que se me alineen todos los planetas. Que mi cartera no haga más dieta. Que me visite la buena suerte para...
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Monday, July the 15th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And of course, I want to welcome in the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to the first half recap edition of the Talking Mets Podcast, coming to you here on a Monday morning. Hope everybody's doing well. Wanted to take a day, had a couple of things to do, but wanted to come to you a little bit refreshed and ready to go. And I always think that the All-Star break, which is never at the halfway point, it's the middle of July, which is really about 60% of the season has gone through, maybe a little bit more, is just as important for the fans as it is for the players. Especially Mets fans, 17 games, 17 days. It has been a complete roller coaster for this fan base. This has been one of the strangest, dynamic, high-low first halves that I could ever remember. Really, I've never remembered a first half like this. And if any fan base deserved 4 days off just to get away from baseball and, just do something else, it's the Mets fans, because I think your emotions have been in all sorts of knots, and you deserve it. And I will say this, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about where this team is. We're also, I think, really understanding what this team needs. And I think the bigger question, and we've already danced around it, is are they ready to invest in this club? And then on the way out after the break, I'm going to get into Pete Alonso, because Pete's in the All-Star game, Pete's in the Home Run Derby. I know that'll be fun for a lot of people. I know the league really likes Pete and Pete's personality. And I think we're at a point where not only is Pete Alonso a big part of the last half of the year, if the Mets are going to make a run here and sustain their offensive success, but we may be seeing the final days of Pete Alonso. And if we're not seeing the final days, how can this union continue and continue responsibly for the Mets? So we'll get a little bit into Pete Alonso in the back half. But what I found interesting is I went to Citi Field last week, and I don't cover games in the press box anymore. I really don't see a value for what I do doing that. I'm able to make friends throughout the league, talk to people, but the point of this show has not to been a fan show, but to be someone that understands the game. And most talk radio guys are never in the press box anyway, so I'm not really any different. And go out there and bridge the gap between the fan, the team, and bring something together. And you could still do a lot of that without sitting in the press box, which a lot of that has become basically stenographer work. And I also believe not getting too close to the prospective players because of the quid pro quo that media is today is important for me, to be honest. So I don't spend time trying to go through that dance. Tried to do it. It's hard. They really don't want you when you're not affiliated. Another story for another day. But I do go as a fan, and I go as a fan a couple of times, two, three, four times a year. And I will say this. I went early in the year against the Pirates. I think that was the second homestand, right when things were starting to get better. And it was right after I'd criticized the fans for what was an awful opening week. The energy at the field was absolutely awful. And one of the themes of the show for many, many years, and it's a lot of that magic beans and pixie dust stuff that I sometimes criticize the Yankees fans for having on the opposite side, is the anvil that's on this organization. The anvil of failed expectations, the anvil of bad luck, the anvil of Murphy's Law. And it's gotten so bad that I feel the fans have become almost like Charlie Brown in the football. And the fans have not only embraced this, I think the fans have gotten to the point, whether it's some kind of ideological subversion or Stockholm syndrome or whatever it may be, maybe I'm not using the right analogy, that they've fed into this and they're not happy unless they're miserable. And nothing was more apparent to me than that first opening series of the season. Now, the old chicken and the egg, if the team plays well, the fans get positive and happy, and if the team plays poorly, the fans are negative, is true. But this fan base tends to, and we'll see as the season goes on, sit on its hands, have this tension that cuts like a knife, and doesn't necessarily handle the ups and downs and the adversity of the baseball season well at all. Now, I can tell you, going to Citi Field last week against the Nats, I saw something different. And it's not just the fans and the play on the field. That was apparent that it was different. You know, the Mets get down, Severino makes a bad play, not backing up. And probably the first week of the season, everybody in the stands would say, oh, it's over, or they'd spend the good majority of the ball game lamenting about how can the guy not back up, he's paid this much. And something funny happened on Tuesday. Fans didn't really dwell on it. They moved on. They moved on with the game, and the Mets came back, and they won, and they got some big hits, and they got some big outs from some new guys in the bullpen, like Jose Buto, and the Mets won. And that seems to have been a theme a lot throughout, oh, I would say, late May into now, as the Mets have played at a tremendous clip, a clip that rivals that of the 86 team, if you think about it. And maybe they're a little over-indexed after being significantly under-indexed, but they're playing at that clip. And as I left the ballpark after a great Mets win, I noticed something. Everybody, including those who are employed there, are positive and happy and feeling good. I mean, the usher over there behind home plate in Section 15 giving high fives to the fans, saying thanks for coming. As I leave the ballpark and I'm going out through the main gate, you know, very nice and I guess their role would be directing traffic. Very nice lady says, hey, Mike. Well, they didn't call me Mike, but said, hey, I forgot to pop my mirrors out, who I'd slid my mirrors in when I parked. And she did it for me, which I had no idea because I'm not paying attention. I'm listening to the post game, and I'm not paying attention because I don't need my mirrors at that point. I would have needed them when I got on the highway. That would have been interesting. But anyway, it just was a different feel. And as I was driving home from the ball game the other night, I was thinking of this because I was thinking about, and obviously there was more time for me to recap the first half. How can I recap the first half? How can I give a little bow or cherry on top of the first half without doing what everybody does? You know, there are going to be sites and shows that are going to do, oh, this is an A, this is a B. You know, they're going to go back and they're going to recap or restate what happened. You watched it. You don't need me to go in and do that for you. What you need me to do is to give you something to chew on. And I can tell you that if the Mets are going to be successful, not only this year, but going forward, the energy around this club needs to change. And we thought the energy changing was just going to be an owner with a lot of money. And it helped. And money helps. And spending helps. Because guess what? The Wilpons can't go out and take on Phil Maton's salary because they don't want to pay the tax and because they had a moving budget. So that's part of how this will get better, by bringing in better players, by being able to disguise some mistakes. But it's more than that, because the mindset of everybody has to change. The mindset that Murphy's Law of baseball will always happen to this club has to change. And I know you have some famous fans that make a living, all due respect, on that whole premise, and it's a profit center for them, and that's their thing. But that has to be rejected. That's always going to exist, and it's going to rear its head. Believe me, this is just beginning. If this thing is going to go even into a wild card round, even into an 84 to 88 win bandwidth, there are going to be some tough, tough, tough times. But I think the fact of the matter remains, the fans on social media, the fans at the ballpark, the people that work around the team are enjoying being part of this. And this is not the first time that the Mets have gone on a run or have been in this similar type of situation. I mean, you could say the 2019 club, the 2021 club, there's been other clubs, but the energy has been different. And it wasn't like that for a big chunk of the year. Now, are you going to tell me that a guy off the scrap heap, a middle infielder who was meant to be a 4A backup, end of the career middle infielder, Jose Iglesias, with his OMG song, is that the reason? Perhaps. Perhaps. I mean, sometimes it's a situation where it's perspective. And somebody coming in with basically his career on life support and showing everybody, hey, you know, this is fast and fleeting. Let's have some fun with it. Is it the veteran, like I said, JD Martinez, who knows? He's obviously in the sunset of his career. How many more days of sunshine does this guy have left, even with the elite production he produces? He doesn't know. Look at Iglesias. He was sitting home. Nobody wanted to touch him. Nobody wants to touch expensive veterans. Him coming in when things were going to hell in a handbag and saying, hey, nobody expects us to win, so screw it. Let's go out and just play our game. You know, is it the emergence of Brandon Nimmo becoming an elite, elite, elite all-around hitter, not just this top-of-the-order run creator, an analytics guy? You can start to see the counting stats that everybody has grown up with build up with Nimmo. Is it the leadership of Lindor that everybody debates? The energy, the fact that, you know, he continues to go out there, maybe be the most underappreciated player in the game. Some ways you could say he's overpaid, and maybe everybody thought they were getting A-Rod, but the way salaries are going, I mean, think about it. You think anybody in the Players Association is turning around and say, look at the NBA guys, what they're getting, $70 million a year? Whoa. But in some ways, you know, Lindor can be underrated, and he goes out there and he posts every day, and he seems to be enjoying himself. Is it the emergence of two young stars, one expected, one unexpected, in Vientos and Alvarez? You know who's who. And then at the end of the day, you can add a Pete Alonso to the list. You know, some of these free agents like Bader and Quintana and Severino, who have something to prove. I mean, I think it was Lindor that said these guys have to prove they want their long-term contracts. They want their careers to continue in a positive trajectory. Remember, as the game gets more expensive, as the luxury tax becomes more onerous, every one of those names, every one of those pitchers, if they don't perform, they are more than likely going to be singing for their supper consistently for a job, because owners don't want to spend luxury tax dollars on scrap heap or mid-range or lower-class players, even if their name and resume meant at some point in their careers that they were elite. So when you have that melting pot together of, I don't give a you know what, enjoying their final shot, something to prove, emerging stars, steady leaders and steady stars, it may be something special. And a lot of this has happened since basically Memorial Day, since I came on the air and said it's time to rip it apart. I mean, think about this first half. I sat there and said, this is too much, this yoke. It's too much for this group. Stearns needs to, and it won't require 5 years, he needs to rip this thing apart, tear, you know, anything that has connections from the last few years, get him out of there. Yeah, Nimmo's going to be around. Yeah, Lindor's going to be around. You could work around that. But it's time for it all to go. It's time to start fresh. It's time to bring up kids that are not soiled by what this is and figure out how they can be the next wave of positive energy. Can they be the next 80s Mets that erases the stench from the 1970s, that moves away from everything that is the summer of 69. And I think as you go further and further away from 86, that's partly what's necessary. The modern fan, the young fan, doesn't want to hear about 86 anymore. I don't even think they want to hear about the Subway Series in 2000. Maybe they want to look at Reyes and Wright, but that ended poorly. They want to move away and they want it to start fresh and new. And the energy and excitement that you're seeing, and yeah, is there goofiness to it, Grimace, and now the dog, and OMG, there's a ton of goofiness to it. But that's what makes this fun. Remember, this is to have us get away from the real world, especially after this weekend with all the nonsense and the garbage that goes on, things that have transpired and happened, how you can't turn on the news without feeling like complete utter garbage. The last thing you want to do is look at your baseball team and feel like garbage and be angry and negative and want to spend the entire 2.5 to 3 hour experience lamenting about how horrible your life is. You can do a lot of things. You don't need to do this. And the Mets were at a critical point, I mean, in Cohen's ownership. Now, I don't know what's going to happen in the second half. And guys, believe me, they've got a bear of a schedule. I know everybody says, oh, the Mets have the third easiest schedule. I don't want to hear that because I'm looking at it right now. And yeah, they got Miami. And they always seem to play the Mets well, Miami. And you're going down to that septic ballpark. I heard it's a great ballpark, but on TV it just looks like dull and boring. It looks like you might as well be playing. It's vanilla. And then you got the Subway Series, and those guys, I know they had a bad loss this weekend in Baltimore, but they're not going to want the Mets to come in after sweeping them and having a party at Yankee Stadium. And then you got the Braves, and then you got the Twins. And yeah, the Braves aren't the Braves, and they're vulnerable, and the Mets have them in their eyes right there, but they're still the Braves. And then you got to go on the West Coast to Anaheim. You got to stop at a pit stop in St. Louis for a makeup game. Colorado, geez, how annoying were the Rockies? 30 games under 500, but they got some guys that can hit the ball. And then you go out to Seattle. That's like going to the moon. That's a tough, tough trip. That's a really tough trip. That's a trip in early August that if you don't have your stuff together, could undo your season like the 2021 Mets. And then you come back home and sure, you have the Oakland and Miami and the Orioles and things like that. But, you know, this isn't going to be easy. They got more West Coast. They end the season in Atlanta and Milwaukee. I mean, let's not look ahead. The old adage is take it day by day. And Mendoza said it. You heard him on the clip coming in. There's something special going on with this club. And I cannot believe that I'm sitting here today and I am witnessing a team that has, you know, one of the top teams, if not the top team, with hitting runners in scoring position, a top offense, a top 10 pitching staff, and then there's one Achilles heel. And the amazing part is, with the bullpen as bad as it's been, with an ERA over 8, with the elite closer getting paid $20 million a year, unable to even be good Diaz, with all the ins and outs, the shuttling, everybody who they seem to plug in is kerosene on the fire. That alone should take this team and do them in. It really should. May, when they were, what, 7-19? That should have did them in. And it hasn't. That's why it's so amazing to see where this team is at. And for the first time in a long time, they're almost hitting on all cylinders. That's very rare. The offense is going. The clutch gene is going. The starting pitching is going. The defense isn't perfect, but it's better. Vientos, to me, has completely ripped the third base job away from Beatty. That's what the amazing part is. Vientos is giving you what you thought Beatty would be, and he's playing not such bad defense. Is he perfect? No. Are there things to worry about? Yeah, watch him closely, and you want to pick. There's things to worry about. And sure, you don't trust him enough late. You got Iglesias coming in. But maybe he can improve. And eventually, not everybody needs to be Mike Schmidt at third defensively. If you hit, they'll find a spot for you in the lineup. You look at all that together. There's one part, and that's where this is getting tricky. There's one part that Stearns has to clean up. And that's the bullpen. And there is going to be a couple of ways to do it. With Senga coming back, I think it's maybe smart to think about Christian Scott in the Buto role. I don't know if there's things about his health or about his prep that he could that allow that to happen, but I think that's something serious. That's a way for you to not have to burn prospect capital. You could go out there and you could start to look at teams like Texas that have a couple of arms, and let's face it, there are a lot of teams still in the race. If you look at the NL wildcard race, as of this morning, as of the All-Star break, you have the three teams, the Braves, the Cards, and the Mets that are in the playoffs as we speak. You have the Diamondbacks a game out, the Padres a game out, the Pirates a game and a half out. Yeah, your Cincinnati, San Francisco, Chicago are under 500, and they fall into what I was saying the Mets are. Talk to me when you get to 500. But they're 3 to 3.5 games out. And then you have your bottom tier of your Miami, Colorado, and Washington. Washington's not buried, but they've already said, hey, we're getting out of this thing. So right now you have about 8 or 9 teams still in it. Where will those teams be in 2 weeks at the deadline? I don't think all of them will be, honestly, buying. But supply and demand, there'll be limited supply and potentially a lot of demand, which means this is going to get expensive and there's going to be pain. And then that's the real question that Stearns, and mainly Stearns, but he has to, if I'm Cohen, I have to ask, do I feel comfortable and what level of comfort do I have in investing in this team? Because I've seen the good and I've seen the real good. I've seen the bad and I've seen the ugly. And the ugly, which is the bullpen's not completely gone. So how comfortable do I feel of sacrificing a Brett Beatty for relievers? Would, and I'm just throwing this out there because I'm extemporaneously talking here, so I'm not doing a lot of research on that. Would Texas take Beatty for Yates and Robertson? Think about it. You potentially are getting a guy that is an impact positional player who might be playing other positions, second base, DH, whatever, for two relievers, one who's been injured, the other that's at the end of their career. That's a great value for Texas. That's an awful value for the Mets in terms of in a vacuum, but it's two arms that they need. Remember the warning, and I'll continue to pound away at this. The Mets are in a similar situation to what the Red Sox were when they traded Larry Anderson for Jeff Bagwell, and they traded Jeff Bagwell for Larry Anderson. And they did that trade. That could happen. Fernando Tatis Jr. was traded for James Shields. You could look up in 3 or 4 years and say, damn. And then these guys come over, and you have no idea what version of these guys you get, no matter how good they are. Look at what happened with Robertson in Miami. The Mets are in the worst possible spot in the sense where you have to fix something that's fixable. Out of all the things, getting an impact bat, getting an impact top of the rotation starter, bullpen, you'll get somebody. You got Maton. And look, maybe there's more there in Tampa. They've already made a deal. Maybe Tampa is the beginning of something more. But the real question Stearns has to ask is, how much pain do I need right now to sacrifice for a team? And let's just do the math. Right now, they're on pace for 84 wins. I don't know if that'll be enough to make the postseason. Not when you have some of the teams. I mean, the Pirates have a ton of good starting pitching. Arizona has pitching coming back. San Diego shouldn't be taken lightly. You know, you want to leave the Reds and the Giants and the Cubs out, fine, but they have some things there. And if you want to even talk about going forward, right now, I think they're certainly right there with the Cardinals, but if you want to get serious, you're 4 games back in the loss column of the Braves. You're going to need to get better bullpen help. You need to be better. You need to heighten your performance. And if you look right now, the Mets are 49 and 46. If they win 84 games, that's just 35 and 32 in the second half. That's doable. I think the club right now with moderate bullpen upgrades. Now, they have to have bullpen. To get that, they have to have a bullpen upgrade because they got some gnarly parts to their schedule. But you want to think big. You want to think next level. You want to think, hey, really put yourself in a position that matters? 88 wins? That's 39 and 28. Let's think really big. Winning 6 out of 10 on a consistent basis. That'll bring you to 90 wins at 41 and 26. They've been playing at that clip since about Memorial Day. But they've been doing it with a rotation, doing, even if they're not giving you length, really good starts and a high-level offense averaging 5.5 runs a game. When we did our calculator back in the spring before the season, based on the steamer projections. And forget that you had Vientos doing this, like, and at that point, I don't even think whether J.D. Martinez was in the mix. It's the steamer projections gave the Mets 5 runs a game. And I was like, well, they're probably like the 2022 club where They could put up a crooked number and they have some stretches, but give me 4.7, 4.8, that 4.5 runs per game. If they got, because at that point we thought the bullpen with Diaz would be way better, they're going to be out there winning a lot of 4-3 games. And they are winning a lot of one-run games, and that's the next component that has some variability. Because this team is playing close games, they're going to start to, the worm is going to start to turn. The reason they're playing close games now is not because they can't score, because the bullpen, even with a 7-0 lead, makes it a three-alarm fire. So there is tons of good vibes here. Really. And that is an amazing turnaround. I have never seen something like this maybe in Mets history. And maybe we're seeing an innocent climb like 1984 or 1997 or in some cases 2005 before the great 2006 season. Maybe we're seeing that. But you only get so many chances to make the postseason. And you have some guys here, and I'll get to him in the second half, like Pete Alonso, Bader, Severino. You don't know where they're going to be next year. You don't know what their markets are going to dictate. Look, you don't know. Look at what the Diaz elite year, and look at where he is now after the injury. Sometimes when you get these elite performances, you don't know. Lindor's not going to be young forever. Nimmo's not going to be young forever. Right now, they're smack in their prime, and you're getting the best of them. And sometimes you like to wait for everything to be perfect to invest in a club. There's really never going to be a perfect situation. There's never going to be the schedule. Remember the old schedule back when the Mets had all that pitching? Well, they're going to be contenders. They're going to be in the NLCS with the Cubs because they have the offense year after year after year. The Mets never got a title, and the Cubs got one. You just don't know. Look at the Nats. Look at their schedule. They barely won their title, and they won it later on, way later on. Remember the whole Drew Storm blown save and holding Strasburg back in the playoffs when Davey Johnson was the manager? There's never a schedule. So sit back, relax, enjoy what has been, as tumultuous of a first half as it's been, a really, really fun first half. Understand that it's going to be a situation where you better buckle up. This is about to get a lot harder. Forget what people say about the schedule. Look at the schedule. There's some gnarly parts to it. And the real interesting question that we have, we know what the Mets need. They need bullpen help. Yeah, you could quibble about some other stuff. But right now, the bullpen, in a big way, and I don't mean just one, not another Maton. They may need one, they need a couple more relievers. They don't have enough, because when their A team isn't available, the B team could barely hold on to 5-run leads. That's a problem. So how much does Stearns want to invest? And maybe that answer will come very quickly, because they have some tough games leading up to the deadline. If they peter out, play lousy Miami, the Yankees clobber them, and then they're struggling against Atlanta and Minnesota, maybe Stearns will say, hey, this is a 500 team and we'll have some fun here, but I'm not about to throw a top prospect or a painful trade for my system to support a team that probably is only going to be incrementally better. I don't think that's the answer. I think if you could go out and you could rip a couple of, and you call up Texas again and say, you want a Cuda back? That could happen. That could happen. Don't fool yourself. I'll give you a Cuda back. Give me two of your relievers. That could be a painful trade. It'd be funny if something like that could happen, because I am looking at Yates and Robertson as two guys that are perfect for this club. And probably, depending, and I know Scherzer was on, he was on an interview saying, you know, we're going to get this figured out. But sometimes when you have that hangover and you're at and they won their title and you're in a position where things aren't going your way, GMs, especially smart GMs like Chris Young, say, hey, let's just retreat and restock for another day. Look at Texas. Awful team in 2022. Win a championship in 23. Not so good in 24. You have to go for it. And you have to do it responsibly. Not put all your chips. They're not in a position where all your chips need to be the center of the table. But you have to invest in something that's fun. Whether it's the upliftingness of OMG, Grimace, whatever it is, just a couple of really good prospects building their resume and foundation with elite performance. Whatever it is, like I said earlier, you got to invest in this team because even with this bullpen the way it is, I have a funny feeling there's something different about this club. There's something different about the energy. Maybe I'll be wrong, and maybe I'll talk to you in a week or 2 weeks and say, oh boy, what was I fooled? But when I go to Citi Field and I see the fans and the ushers and the traffic directors there, all feeling good, that's an energy that could turn into something special. All right, let's take a quick break. When I return, Pete Alonso, we've seen the final days of Pete Alonso. We know he's not an all-star. What do we need to see from Pete Alonso? What is the future of Pete Alonso? It is actually going to be critically important, in my opinion, for Pete to return to normal in the second half, to join the party in a big-time way for the Mets to get where they're going to get. So we'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more right after this.